Chapter 5 Methods of Research. "Where on earth have you been, Tuppence?" demanded her husband when he returned to the family mansion the following day. "Well, last of all, I've been in the cellar," said Tuppence.
"Well, I can see that," said Tommy.
"Yes, I do see.
Do you know that your hair is absolutely full of cobwebs?" "Well, it would be, of course. The cellar is full of cobwebs."
"There wasn't anything there, anyway," said Tuppence.
"At least, there were some bottles of bay rum."
"Bay rum?" said Tommy. "That's interesting."
"Is it?" said Tuppence.
"Does one drink it?"
"It seems to me most unlikely."
"No," said Tommy. "I think people used to put it on their hair. I mean men, not women."
"I believe you're right," said Tuppence.
"I remember my uncle.
Yes, I had an uncle who used bay rum. A friend of his used to bring it him from America."
"Oh, really? Well, that seems very interesting," said Tommy.
"I don't think it's particularly interesting," said Tuppence.
"It's no help to us, anyway. I mean, you couldn't hide anything in a bottle of bay rum."
"Oh, so that's what you've been doing."
"Well, one has to start somewhere," said Tuppence.
"It's just possible. If what your pal said to you was true, something could be hidden in this house. Though it's rather difficult to imagine where it could be or what it could be, because, you see, when you sell a house or die or go out of it, the house is then, of course, emptied, isn't it? I mean, anyone who inherits it takes the furniture out and sells it. Or if it's left, the next person comes in and they sell it. And so anything that's left in now could have belonged to the last tenant but one, but certainly not much further back than that."
"And then why should somebody want to injure you, or injure me, or try to get us to leave this house? Unless, I mean, there was something here they didn't want us to find."
"Well, that's all your idea," said Tuppence. "It mightn't be true at all. Anyway, it's not been an entirely wasted day. I have found some things."
"Anything to do with Mary Jordan?"
"Not particularly. The cellar, as I say, is not much good. It had a few old things to do with photography, I think. You know, a developing lamp or something like they used to use in old days, with red glass in it. And the bay rum. But there were no sort of flagstones that looked as though you could pull them up and find anything underneath. There were a few decayed trunks, some tin trunks and a couple of old suitcases, but things that just couldn't be used to put anything in anymore. They'd fall to bits if you kicked them. No, it was a washout."
"Well, I'm sorry," said Tommy.
"So no satisfaction?"
"Well, there were some things that were interesting," I said to myself. One has to say something to oneself.
"I think I'd better go upstairs now and take the cobwebs off before I go on talking."
"Well, I think perhaps you had," said Tommy. "I shall like looking at you better when you've done that."
"If you want to get the proper Darby and Joan feeling," said Tuppence, "you must always look at me and consider that your wife, no matter what her age, still looks lovely to you."
"Tuppence, dearest," said Tommy, "you look excessively lovely to me. And there is a kind of roly-poly of a cobweb hanging down over your left ear, which is most attractive. Rather like the curl that the Empress Eugenie is sometimes represented as having in pictures. You know, running along the corner of her neck. Oh, yours seems to have got a spider in it, too."
"Oh," said Tuppence, "I don't like that."
She brushed the web away with her hand. She duly went upstairs and returned to Tommy later. A glass was awaiting her. She looked at it doubtfully.
"You aren't trying to make me drink bay rum, are you?"
"No, I don't think I particularly want to drink bay rum myself."
"Well," said Tuppence, "if I may get on with what I was saying, I should like you to," said Tommy.
"You'll do it anyway, but I would like to feel it was because I urged you to do so."
"Well, I said to myself, now, if I was going to hide anything in this house that I didn't want anyone else to find, what sort of place would I choose?"
"Yes," said Tommy, "very logical. And so I thought, what places are there where one can hide things? Well, one of them, of course, is Matilda's stomach."
"I beg your pardon," said Tommy. "Matilda's stomach? The rocking horse? I told you about the rocking horse. It's an American rocking horse."
"A lot of things seem to have come from America," said Tommy. "The bay rum, too, you said."
"Well, anyway, the rocking horse did have a hole in its stomach, because old Isaac told me about it. It had a hole in its stomach, and a lot of sort of queer old paper stuff came out of it. Nothing interesting. But anyway, that's the sort of place where anyone might have hidden anything, isn't it?"
"Quite possibly."
"And true love, of course. I examined true love again. You know, it's got a sort of rather old, decayed Macintosh seat. But there was nothing there. And of course, there were no personal things belonging to anyone. So I thought again, Well, after all, there's still the bookcase and books. People hide things in books, and we haven't quite finished doing the book room upstairs, have we?
I thought we had, said Tommy hopefully.
Oh, not really. There was the bottom shelf still. So I went up there and sat down on the floor and looked through the bottom shelf. Most of it was sermons. Sermons of somebody in old times, written by a Methodist minister, I think. Anyway, they weren't interesting. There was nothing in them. So I pulled all those books out on the floor. And then I did make a discovery. Underneath, some time or other, somebody had made a sort of gaping hole and pushed all sorts of things in it. Books, all torn to pieces, more or less. There was one rather big one. It had a brown paper cover on it, and I just pulled it out to see. After all, one never knows, does one? And what do you think it was?
I've no idea. First edition of Robinson Crusoe or something valuable like that?
No, it was a birthday book.
A birthday book? What's that?
Well, they used to have them. It goes back a long time, back to the Parkinsons, I think. Probably before that. Anyway, it was rather battered and torn, not worth keeping, and I don't suppose anyone would have bothered about it. But it does date back, and one might find something in it, I thought.
I see. You mean the sort of thing people might have slipped something into?
Well, yes, but nobody's done that, of course. Nothing so simple. But I'm still going through it quite carefully. I haven't gone through it properly yet. You see, it might have interesting names in it, and one might find out something.
Well, I suppose so, said Tommy, sounding skeptical.
Well, that's one thing. That's the only thing in the book line that I came across. There was nothing else on the bottom shelf. The other thing to look through, of course, is the cupboards.
Well, what about furniture? Said Tommy. Lots of things like secret drawers in furniture and all that.
No, Tommy. You're not looking at things straight. I mean, all the furniture in the house is ours. We moved into an empty house and brought our furniture with us. The only thing we found here from really old times is all that mess out in the place called KK. Old decayed toys and garden seats. I mean, there's no proper antique furniture left in the house. Whoever it was lived here last took it away or else sent it to be sold. There's been lots of people, I expect, since the Parkinsons, so there wouldn't be anything left of theirs here. But I did find something. I don't know. It may mean something helpful.
What was that?
China menu cards.
China menu cards?
Yes, in that old cupboard we haven't been able to get into. The one off the larder. You know, they'd lost the key. Well, I found the key in an old box out in KK, as a matter of fact. I put some oil on it, and I managed to get the cupboard door open. And, well, there was nothing in it. It was just a dirty cupboard with a few broken bits of china left in it. I should think from the last people who were here. But shoved up on the top shelf, there was a little heap of Victorian china menus people used to have at parties. Fascinating, the things they ate. Really, the most delicious meals. I'll read you some after we had dinner. It was fascinating. You know, two soups, clear and thick, and on top of that there were two kinds of fish, and then there were two entrees. I think then you had a salad or something like that, and then after that you had the joint, and after that, I'm not quite sure what came next. I think a sorbet. That's ice cream, isn't it? And actually after that, lobster salad. Can you believe it?
Hush, Tuppence, said Tommy.
I don't really think I can stand any more. Well, anyway, I thought it might be interesting. It dates back, you know. It dates back, I should think, quite a long time.
And what do you hope to get from all these discoveries?
Well, the only thing with possibilities is the birthday book. In it, I see there is a mention of somebody called Winifred Morrison.
Well?
Well, Winifred Morrison, I gather, was the maiden name of old Mrs. Griffin. That's the one I went to tea with the other day. She's one of the oldest inhabitants, you know, and she remembers or knows about a lot of things that happened before her time. Well, I think she might remember or have heard of some of the other names in the birthday book. We might get something from that.
We might, said Tommy, still sounding doubtful.
I still think...
Well, what do you still think? Said Tuppence.
I don't know what to think, said Tommy.
Well, let's go to bed and sleep.
Don't you think we'd better give this business up altogether?
Why should we want to know who killed Mary Jordan?
Well, don't you want to?
No, I don't, said Tommy. At least, oh, I give in. You've got me involved now, I admit.
Haven't you found out anything? Asked Tuppence.
I hadn't time today. But I've got a few more sources of information. I put that woman I told you about, you know, the one who's quite clever about research, I put her onto a few things.
Oh, well, said Tuppence. We'll still hope for the best. It's all nonsense. but perhaps it is rather fun.
Only I'm not sure it's going to be as much fun as you think, said Tommy.
Oh, well.
No matter, said Tuppence. We'll have done our best.
Well, don't go on doing your best all by yourself, said Tommy. That's exactly what worries me so much when I'm away from you.
Chapter 6 Mr. Robinson.
I wonder what Tuppence is doing now, said Tommy, sighing.
Excuse me, I didn't quite hear what you said.
Tommy turned his head to look at Miss Culloden more closely. Miss Culloden was thin, emaciated, had grey hair which was slowly passing through the stage of recovering from a peroxide rinse, designated to make her look younger, which it had not done. She was now trying various shades of artistic grey, cloudy smoke, steel blue, and other interesting shades suitable for a lady between 60 and 65, devoted to the pursuit of research. Her face represented a kind of ascetic superiority and a supreme confidence in her own achievements.
"Oh, it was nothing, really, Miss Culloden," said Tommy. Just something I was considering, you know, just thinking of."
"And what is it, I wonder?" thought Thomas, being careful this time not to utter the words aloud, "that she can be doing today. Something silly, I bet. Half killing herself in that extraordinary, obsolete child's toy that'll come to pieces carrying her down the hill, and she'll probably end up with a broken something or other. Hips, it seems to be nowadays. Though I don't see why hips are more vulnerable than anything else." Tuppence, he thought, would at this moment be doing something silly or foolish, or if not that, she would be doing something which might not be silly or foolish, but would be highly dangerous. Yes, dangerous. It was always difficult keeping Tuppence out of danger. His mind roved vaguely over various incidents in the past. Words of a quotation came into his mind, and he spoke them aloud. "Postern of fate. Pass not beneath, O caravan, or pass not singing. Have you heard that silence where the birds are dead, yet something pipeth like a bird?" Miss Culloden responded immediately, giving Tommy quite a shock of surprise.
"Flecker," she said. "Flecker, it goes on, death's caravan, disaster's cavern, fort of fear."
Tommy stared at her, then realized that Miss Culloden had thought he was bringing her a poetic problem to be researched. Full information on where a certain quotation came from, and who the poet had been who had uttered it. The trouble with Miss Culloden was that her research covered such a broad field.
"I was just wondering about my wife," said Tommy apologetically.
"Oh,"
said Miss Culloden. She looked at Tommy with a rather new expression in her eye. Marital trouble at home, she was deducing. She would presently probably offer him the address of a marriage advice bureau, wherein he might seek adjustment in his matrimonial affairs and troubles. Tommy said hurriedly,
"Have you had any success with that inquiry I spoke to you about the day before yesterday?"
"Oh, yes. Not very much trouble in that. Somerset House is very useful, you know, in all those things. I don't think you know that there is likely to be anything particular that you want there, but I've got the names and addresses of certain births, marriages, and deaths."
"What, are they all Mary Jordans?"
"Jordan, yes, a Mary, a Maria, and a Polly Jordan. Also a Molly Jordan. I don't know if any of them are likely to be what you want. Can I pass this to you?"
She handed him a small typewritten sheet.
"Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. There are several addresses, too, the ones you asked me for. I have not been able to find out the address of Major Dalrymple. People change their addresses constantly nowadays. However, I think another 2 days ought to get that information all right. This is Dr. Heseltine's address. He is at present living at Surbiton."
"Thanks very much," said Tommy. "I might start on him anyway.
Any more queries?"
"Yes, I've got a list here of about 6. Some of them may not be in your line."
"Oh, well," said Miss Culloden with complete assurance, "I have to make things my line, you know.
You can easily find out first just where you can find out, if that isn't a rather foolish way of speech. But it does explain things, you know. I remember, oh, quite a long time ago, when I was first doing this work, I found how useful Selfridge's Advice Bureau was. You could ask them the most extraordinary questions about the most extraordinary things. They always seem to be able to tell you something about it, or where you could get the information quickly. But, of course, they don't do that sort of thing nowadays. Nowadays, you know, most inquiries that are made are
Well, you know, if you want to commit suicide, things like that, Samaritans, and legal questions about wills, and a lot of extraordinary things for authors, of course, and jobs abroad, and immigration problems. Oh, yes, I covered a very wide field.
I'm sure you do, said Tommy.
And helping alcoholics. A lot of societies there are who specialize in that. Some of them are much better than others. I have quite a list, comprehensive, and some most reliable.
I'll remember it, Tommy said, if I ever find myself shaping that way any time. It depends how far I get today.
Oh, I'm sure, Mr. Beresford, I don't see any signs of alcoholic difficulties in you.
No red nose, said Tommy.
Well, it's worse with women, said Miss Culloden.
More difficult, you know, to get them off it, as you might say. Men do relapse, but not so notably.
But really, some women, they seem quite all right, quite happy drinking lemonade in large quantities and all that, and then some evening, in the middle of a party, well, it's all there again.
In turn, she looked at her watch.
Oh, dear, I must go to my next appointment. I have to get to Upper Grosvenor Street.
Thank you very much, said Tommy, for all you've done.
He opened the door politely, helped Miss Culloden on with her coat, went back into the room and said,
I must remember to tell Tuppence this evening that our researches so far have led me to impress a research agent with the idea that my wife drinks and our marriage is breaking up because of it.
Oh, dear, what next? What next was an appointment in an inexpensive restaurant in the neighbourhood of Tottenham Court Road.
Well, I never,
said an elderly man, leaping up from his seat where he was sitting waiting.
Carroty Tom, on my life! Shouldn't have known you!
Possibly not, said Tommy.
Not much carrots left about me. It's grey-haired, Tom.
Well, we're all that. How's your health?
Much the same as I always was.
Cracking, you know, decomposing by degrees. How long is it since I've seen you? 2 years? 8 years? 11 years?
Now you're going too far, said Tommy.
We met at the Maltese Cat's dinner last autumn. Don't you remember? Ah, so we did. It's a pity that broke up, you know. I always thought it would. Nice premises, but the food was rotten. Well, what are you doing these days, old boy? Still in the espionage, up to date to do?
No, said Tommy. I'm nothing to do with espionage.
Oh, dear me, what a waste of your activities.
And what about you, Mutton Chop?
Oh, I'm much too old to serve my country in that way.
No espionage going on nowadays?
Oh, lots of it, I expect. But probably they put the bright boys onto it. The ones who come bursting out of universities, needing a job badly. Where are you now?
I sent you a Christmas card this year.
Well, I didn't actually post it until January, but anyway, it came back to me with not known of this address.
No, we've gone to the country to live now, down near the sea, Holloquay.
Holloquay? Holloquay. I seem to remember something. Something in your line going on there once, wasn't there?
Not in my time, said Tommy.
I've only just got to hear of it since going to live there.
Legends of the past, at least 60 years ago.
Something to do with a submarine, wasn't it? Plans of a submarine sold to someone or other? I forget who we were selling to at that time. Might have been the Japanese, might have been the Russians. Oh, and lots of others. People always seem to meet enemy agents in Regent's Park or somewhere like that. You know, they'd meet someone like a third secretary from an embassy. Not so many beautiful lady spies around as there used to be once in fiction.
I wanted to ask you a few things, Mutton Chop.
Oh, no, ask away. I've had a very uneventful life. Marjorie, do you remember Marjorie?
Oh, yes, of course I remember Marjorie. I nearly got to your wedding.
I know, but you couldn't make it or something. Or you took the wrong train, as far as I remember. A train that was going to Scotland instead of Southall. Anyway, just as well you didn't. Nothing much came of it.
But didn't you get married?
Oh, yes, I got married, but somehow or other it didn't take very well. No, a year and a half, and it was done with. She's married again. I haven't. But I'm doing very nicely. I live at Little Pollen. Quite a decent golf course there. My sister lives with me. She's a widow, with a nice bit of money, and we get on very well together. She's a bit deaf, so she doesn't hear what I say, but it only means shouting a bit.
You said you'd heard of Holloquay. Was it really something to do with spying of some kind?
Well, to tell you the truth, old boy, it's so long ago that I can't remember much about it. It made a big stir at the time, you know. Splendid young naval officer, absolutely above suspicion in every way. 90% British, rated about 105 in reliability. Nothing of the kind, really. In the pay of, well, I can't remember now who he was in the pay of. Germany, I suppose. Before the 1914 war. Yes, I think it was. And there was a woman, too, I believe, associated with it all, said Tommy. Yeah, I seem to remember hearing something about a Mary Jordan, I think it was. Mind you, I'm not clear about this. Got into the papers, and I think it was a wife of his. I mean, of the above-suspicion naval officer. It was his wife who got in touch with the Russians, and, no, that's something that happened since then. One mixes things up so, and they all sound alike. Wife thought he wasn't getting enough money, which meant, I suppose, that she wasn't getting enough money. And so, well, why do you want to dig up all this old history? What's it got to do with you after all this time? I know you had something to do once with someone who was on the Lusitania, or went down with the Lusitania, or something like that, didn't you? If we go back as far as that, I mean, wasn't that what you were mixed up in once? Or your wife was mixed up in? We were both mixed up in it, said Tommy. And it's such a very long time ago that I really can't remember anything about it now. There was some woman associated with that, wasn't there? Name like Jane Fish or something like that, or was it Jane Whale? Jane Finn, said Tommy. Oh, yeah, well, where is she now? She's married to an American. Oh, I see. Well, all very nice. One always seems to get talking about one's old pals and what's happened to them all. When you talk about old friends, either they're dead, which surprises you enormously because you didn't think they would be, or else they're not dead, and that surprises you even more. Huh, it's a very difficult world. Tommy said yes, it was a very difficult world. And here was the waiter coming. What could they have to eat? The conversation thereafter was gastronomic. In the afternoon, Tommy had another interview arranged, this time with a sad, grizzled man sitting in an office and obviously grudging the time he was giving Tommy.
Well, I really couldn't say. Of course, I know roughly what you're talking about. A lot of talk about it at the time caused a big political blow-up, but I really have no information about that sort of thing, you know. No. You see, these things, they don't last, do they? They soon pass out of one's mind once the press gets hold of some other juicy scandal.
He opened up slightly on a few of his own interesting moments in life, when something he'd never suspected came suddenly to light, or his suspicions had suddenly been aroused by some very peculiar event. He said,
Well, I've just got one thing that might help. Here's an address for you, and I've made an appointment too. A nice chap, knows everything. He's the tops, you know, absolutely the tops. One of my daughters was a godchild of his. That's why he's awfully nice to me and will always do me a good turn if possible. So I asked him if he would see you. I said there were some things you wanted the top news about. I said what a good chap you were and various things, and he said, yes, he'd heard of you already. Knew something about you, he said. Of course, come along. 345, I think. Here's the address. It's an office in the city, I think. Ever met him?
I don't think so, said Tommy, looking at the card and the address. No.
Well, you wouldn't think he knew anything to look at him. I mean, big. You know, and yellow.
Oh, said Tommy. Big and yellow. It didn't really convey much information to his mind.
He's the tops, said Tommy's grizzled friend. Absolutely tops. You go along there. He'll be able to tell you something, anyway. Good luck, old chap.
Tommy, having successfully got himself to the city office in question, was received by a man of 35 to 40 years of age, who looked at him with the eye of one determined to do the worst without delay. Tommy felt that he was suspected of many things, possibly carrying a bomb in some deceptive container, or prepared to hijack or kidnap someone, or hold up with a revolver the entire staff. It made Tommy extremely nervous.
You have an appointment with Mr. Robinson.
At what time did you say?
Ah, 3:45. Mr. Thomas Beresford, is that right?
Yes, said Tommy.
Ah, just sign your name here, please.
Tommy signed his name where he was told.
Johnson?
A nervous-looking young man of about 23 seemed like an apparition arising out of a glass-partitioned desk.
Yes, sir?
Take Mr. Beresford up to the fourth floor, to Mr. Robinson's office.
Yes, sir.
He led Tommy to a lift, the kind of lift that always seemed to have its own idea of how it should deal with those people who came into it. The doors rolled open. Tommy passed in. The doors very nearly pinched him in doing so, and just managed to slam themselves shut about an inch from his spine.
Cold afternoon,
said Johnson, showing a friendly attitude to someone who was clearly being allowed to approach the high one in the highest.
Yes, said Tommy. It always seems to be cold in the afternoons.
Some say it's pollution. Some say it's all the natural gas they're taking out of the North Sea, said Johnson.
No, I haven't heard that, said Tommy.
Doesn't seem likely to me, said Johnson.
They passed the second floor and the third floor and finally arrived at the fourth floor. Johnson led Tommy, again escaping the closing doors by a mere inch, along a passage to a door. He knocked, was told to enter, held the door open, insinuated Tommy across the threshold, and said,
Mr. Beresford, sir, by appointment.
He went out and shut the door behind him. Tommy advanced. The room seemed to be mainly filled by an enormous desk. Behind the desk sat a rather enormous man, a man of great weight and many inches. He had, as Tommy had been prepared for by his friend, a very large and yellow face. What nationality he was, Tommy had no idea. He might have been anything. Tommy had a feeling he was probably foreign. A German, perhaps? Or an Austrian? Possibly a Japanese? Or else, he might be very decidedly English.
Ah, Mr. Beresford.
Mr. Robinson got up, shook hands.
I'm sorry if I come taking a lot of your time, said Tommy.
He had a feeling he had once seen Mr. Robinson before, or had had Mr. Robinson pointed out to him. Anyway, on the occasion, whatever it had been, he had been rather shy about it, because obviously Mr. Robinson was someone very important. And, he now gathered, or rather felt at once, he was still very important.
There's something you want to know about, I gather. Your friend, what's his name, just gave me a brief resume.
I don't suppose, I mean it's something perhaps I oughtn't to bother you about. I don't suppose it's anything of importance. It was just
an idea?
Partly my wife's idea.
I've heard about your wife. I've heard about you, too. Let me see. The last time was M or N, wasn't it? Or N or M? I remember. Remember all the facts and things. You got that commander chap, didn't you? The one who was in the English Navy, supposedly, but was actually a very important Hun. I still call them Huns occasionally, you know. Of course, I know we're all different now. We're in the common market. All in the nursery school together, as you might say, I know. You did a good bit of work there. A very good bit indeed, and so did your missus. My word, all those children's books. I remember, Goosey Goosey Gander, wasn't it? The one that gave the show away. Where do you wander, upstairs and downstairs and in my lady's chamber?
Fancy you remembering that, said Tommy with great respect.
Yes, I know, one's always surprised when one remembers something. It just came back to me at that minute. So silly, you know. With hindsight, you'd never have suspected it of being anyone else, would you?
Yes, it was a good show.
Now, what's the matter now? What are you up against?
Well, it's nothing, really, said Tommy. It's just...
Come on, put it in your own words. You needn't make a thing of it. Just tell me the story. Sit down, take the weight off your feet. Don't you know, or you will know when you're some years older, resting your feet is important.
I'm old enough already, I should think, said Tommy.
There can't be much ahead of me now except a coffin, in due course.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
I tell you, once you get above a certain age, you can go on living practically forever. Now then, what's all this about?
Well, said Tommy, briefly, my wife and I went into a new house, and there was all the fuss of getting into a new house.
I know, said Mr. Robinson. Yes, I know the sort of thing. Electricians all over the floor. They pick holes and you fall into them, and
there were some books there. People moving out wanted to sell.
A lot of children's books, all sorts of things. You know, Henty and things like that. I remember Henty from my own youth. And in one book my wife was reading, we found a passage underlined. The letters were underlined, and it made a sentence when you put it together. And this sounds awfully silly, what I'm going to say next.
Well, that's hopeful, said Mr. Robinson. If a thing sounds silly, I always want to hear about it.
It said, Mary Jordan did not die naturally. It must have been one of us.
Very, very interesting, said Mr. Robinson. I've never come across anything like that before. It said that, did it? Mary Jordan did not die a natural death. And who was it who wrote it? Any clue of that? Apparently a boy of school age. Parkinson was the family's name. They lived in this house, and he was one of the Parkinsons, we gathered. Alexander Parkinson. At least, anyway, he's buried there in the churchyard.
Parkinson, said Mr. Robinson. Wait a bit, let me think. Parkinson.
Yes, you know, there was a name like that connected with things, but you don't always remember who or what or where.
And we've been very keen to learn who Mary Jordan was.
Because she didn't die a natural death, yes, I suppose that could be rather your line of country.
But it seems very odd. What did you find out about her?
Absolutely nothing, said Tommy. Nobody seems to remember her much or say anything about her.
At least somebody did say she was what we'd call an au pair girl nowadays, or a governess, or something like that. They couldn't remember. A mamselle or a fraulein, they said. It's all very difficult, you see.
And she died.
What did she die of?
Well, somebody brought a few foxglove leaves in with some spinach from the garden by accident, and then they ate it.
Mind you, that probably wouldn't kill you.
No, said Mr. Robinson, not enough of it. But if you then put a strong dose of digitalian alkaloid in the coffee and just made sure that Mary Jordan got it in her coffee or in a cocktail earlier, then, as you say, the foxglove leaves would be blamed and it would all be taken to be an accident. But Alexander Parker, or whatever the schoolboy's name was too sharp for that. He had other ideas, did he?
Anything else, Beresford?
When was this? First World War? Second World War, or before that?
Before. Rumors passed down through elderly ancestors say she was a German spy.
I remember that case. Made a big sensation.
Any German working in England before 1914 was always said to be a spy. The English officer involved was one always said to be above suspicion.
I always look very hard at anyone who is above suspicion.
It's all a long time ago. I don't think it's ever been written up in recent years. I mean, not in the way that things are occasionally for public enjoyment when they release a bit of stuff from the records.
Yes, but it's all rather sketchy.
Yes, it would be now.
It's always been associated, of course, with the submarine secrets that were stolen around then.
There was some aviation news as well.
A lot of that side of it, and that's what caught the public interest, as you might say.
But there are a lot of things, you know. There was the political side to it, too. A lot of our prominent politicians. You know the sort of chaps people say, well, he has real integrity.
Real integrity is just as dangerous as being above suspicion in the services.
Real integrity, my foot, said Mr. Robinson.
I remember it with the last war.
Some people haven't got the integrity they're credited with.
One chap lived down near you know.
He had a cottage on the beach, I think.
Made a lot of disciples, you know, praising Hitler. Saying our only chance was to get in with him.
Really, the fellow seemed such a noble man, had some wonderful ideas, was so terribly keen to abolish all poverty and difficulties and injustice, things of that kind.
Oh, yes, blew the fascist trumpet without calling it fascism.
And Spain, too, you know, was in with Franco and all that lot to begin with. And dear old Mussolini. Naturally, spouting away.
Yes, there are always a lot of sidelines to it just before wars.
Things that never came out and nobody ever really knew about.
You seem to know everything, said Tommy.
I beg your pardon, perhaps that's rather rude of me. But it really is very exciting to come across someone who does seem to know about everything.
Well, I've often had a finger in the pie, as you might say. You know, come into things on the sidelines or in the background. One hears a good deal. One hears a good deal from one's old cronies, too, who were in it up to the neck and who knew the lot. I expect you begin to find that, don't you?
Yes, said Tommy, it's quite true. I meet old friends, you know, and they've seen other old friends, and there are quite a lot of things that, well, one's friends knew and you knew. You didn't get together just then, but now you do hear about them, and they're very interesting sometimes.
Yes, said Mr. Robinson. I see where you're going, where you're tending, you might say.
It's interesting that you should come across this.
The trouble is, said Tommy, that I don't really know. I mean, perhaps we're being rather silly. I mean, we bought this house to live in, the sort of house we wanted. We've done it up the way we want, and we're trying to get the garden in some kind of shape, but I mean, I don't want to get tied up in this sort of stuff again. It's just pure curiosity on our part, something that happened a long time ago, and you can't help thinking about it or wanting to know why. But there's no point in it. It's not going to do anybody any good.
I know. You just want to know.
Well, that's the way the human being is made. That's what leads us to explore things, to go and fly to the moon, to bother about underwater discoveries, to find natural gas in the North Sea, to find oxygen supplied to us by the sea and not by the trees and the forests. Quite a lot of things they're always finding out about, just through curiosity. I suppose without curiosity a man would be a tortoise. Very comfortable life a tortoise has. Goes to sleep all the winter, and doesn't eat anything more than grass, as far as I know, to live all the summer. Not an interesting life, perhaps, but a very peaceful one. On the other hand, one might say man is more like a mongoose.
Good. You're a reader of Kipling. I'm so glad.
Kipling's not appreciated as much as he should be nowadays. He was a wonderful chap. A wonderful person to read nowadays. His short stories, amazingly good they are. I don't think it's ever been realized enough.
I don't want to make a fool of myself, said Tommy. I don't want to mix myself up in a lot of things which have nothing to do with me. Not anything to do with anybody nowadays, I should say.
That you never know, said Mr. Robinson.
I mean, really, said Tommy, who was now completely swamped in a cloud of guilt for having disturbed a very important man. I mean, I'm not just trying to find out things.
Got to try and find out things just to satisfy your wife, I suppose.
Yes, I've heard of her. I've never had the pleasure of meeting her, I don't think.
Rather wonderful person, isn't she?
I think so, said Tommy.
Well, that's good to hear. I like people who stick together and enjoy their marriage and go on enjoying it.
Really, I'm like the tortoise, I suppose. I mean, there we are, we're old and we're tired, and although we've got very good health for our age, we don't want to be mixed up in anything nowadays. We're not trying to butt into anything, we just...
I know, said Mr. Robinson. Don't keep apologizing for it. You want to know. Like the mongoose, you want to know. And Mrs. Beresford, she wants to know. Moreover, I should say, from all I've heard of her and been told of her, I should say she will get to know somehow.
You think she's more likely to do it than I am?
Well, I don't think perhaps you are quite as keen on finding out things as she is. But I think you're just as likely to get onto it, because I think you're rather good at finding sources. It's not easy to find sources for something as long ago as that.
That's why I feel awful about having come and disturbed you. But I wouldn't have done it on my own. It was only mutton chop. I mean,
I know who you mean. Had mutton chop whiskers and was rather pleased with them at one time. That's why he was called that. A nice chap. Done good work in his time.
Yes, he sent you to me because he knew that I'm interested in anything like that.
I started quite early, you know, poking about, I mean, and finding out things.
And now, said Tommy, now you're the tops.
Now who told you that, said Mr. Robinson.
All nonsense.
I don't think it is, said Tommy.
Well, said Mr. Robinson, some get to the tops and some have the tops forced upon them. I would say the latter applies to me, more or less. I've had a few things of surpassing interest forced upon me.
Well, that business connected with, Frankfurt, wasn't it?
Ah, you've heard the rumors, have you? Ah, well, don't think about them anymore. They're not supposed to be known much. Don't think I'm going to rebuff you for coming here asking me questions. I probably can answer some of the things you want to know. If I said there was something that happened years ago that might result in something being known that would be possibly interesting nowadays, sometimes that would give one a bit of information about things that might be going on nowadays that might be true enough. I wouldn't put it past anyone or anything. I don't know what I can suggest to you, though. It's a question of worry about. Listen to people. Find out what you can about bygone years. If anything comes along that you think might be interesting to me, just give me a ring or something. We'll find some code words, you know, just to make ourselves feel excited again. Feel as though we really mattered. Crabapple jelly, how would that be? You know, you say your wife's made some jars of crabapple jelly, and would I like a pot? I'll know what you mean. You mean that I would have found out something about Mary Jordan? Well, I don't see there's any point in going on with that. After all, she's dead. Yes, she's dead. But, well, you see, sometimes one has the wrong ideas about people because of what you've been told, or because of what's been written. You mean we have wrong ideas about Mary Jordan? You mean she wasn't important at all? Oh, yes, she could have been very important. Mr. Robinson looked at his watch. I have to push you off now. There's a chap coming in 10 minutes, and an awful bore, but he's high up in government circles, and you know what life is nowadays. Government, government. You've got to stand it everywhere. In the office, in the home, in the supermarkets, on the television. Private life. That's what we want more of nowadays. Now, this little fun and games that you and your wife are having, you're in private life, and you can look at it from the background of private life. Who knows? You might find out something. Something that would be interesting. Yes, you may, and you may not. I can't tell you anything more about it. I know some of the facts that probably nobody else can tell you, and in due course I might be able to tell them to you. But as they're all dead and done with, that's not really practical. I'll tell you one thing that will perhaps help you in your investigations. You read about this case, the trial of Commander whoever he was, I've forgotten his name now, and he was tried for espionage, did a sentence for it, and richly deserved it. He was a traitor to this country, and that's that. But Mary Jordan? Yes? You want to know something about Mary Jordan? Well, I'll tell you one thing that might, as I say, help your point of view. Mary Jordan was, well, you can call it a spy, but she wasn't a German spy. She wasn't an enemy spy. Listen to this, my boy. Oh, I can't keep calling you my boy. Mr. Robinson dropped his voice and leaned forward over his desk. She was one of our lot. Book 3 Chapter 1 Mary Jordan.
But that alters everything, said Tuppence.
Yes, said Tommy. Yes, it was quite a shock.
Why did he tell you?
I don't know, said Tommy. I thought, well, two or three different things.
Did he? What's he like, Tommy? You haven't really told me.
Well, he's, yellow, said Tommy. Yellow and big and fat and very, very ordinary. But at the same time, if you know what I mean, he isn't ordinary at all. He's what my friend said he was. He's one of the tops. You sound like someone talking about pop singers. Oh, well, one gets used to using these terms.
Well, yes, but why? Surely that was revealing something that he wouldn't have wanted to reveal, you'd think.
It was a long time ago, said Tommy. It's all over, you see. I suppose none of it matters nowadays. I mean, look at all the things they're releasing now off the record. You know, not hushing up things anymore, letting it all come out, what really happened. What one person wrote and what another person said and what one row was about and how something else was all hushed up because of something you never heard about.
You make me feel horribly confused, said Tuppence, when you say things like that. It makes everything wrong, too, doesn't it?
Well, how do you mean it makes everything wrong?
Well, I mean, the way we've been looking at it. I mean, what do I mean?
Go on, said Tommy.
You must know what you mean. Well, what I said, it's all wrong. I mean, we found this thing in the Black Arrow, and it was all clear enough. Somebody had written it in there, probably this boy Alexander, and it meant that somebody, one of them, he said, at least one of us. I mean, he put it that way, but that's what he meant. One of the family, or somebody in the house, or something, had arranged to bring about the death of Mary Jordan. And we didn't know who Mary Jordan was, which was very baffling.
Goodness knows it's been baffling, said Tommy.
Well, it hasn't baffled you as much as me. It's baffled me a great deal. I haven't really found out anything about her. At least,
what you found out about her was that she had been apparently a German spy. Isn't that what you mean? You found out that?
Yes. That is what was believed about her, and I suppose it was true. Only now,
yes, said Tommy.
Only now we know that it wasn't true. She was the opposite to a German spy. She was a sort of English spy.
Well, she must have been in the English espionage, or security, or whatever it was called. And she came here in some capacity to find out something. Find out something what's his name now? I wish I could remember names better. I mean, the naval officer, or the army officer, or whatever he was. The one who sold the secret of the submarine, or something like that. Yes, I suppose there was a little cluster of German agents here, rather like in NRM all over again, all busy preparing things.
It would seem so, yes.
And she was sent here, in that case, presumably, to find out all about it.
I see.
So, one of us didn't mean what we thought it meant. One of us meant, well, it had to be someone who was in the neighborhood, and someone who had something to do with the house, or was in this house for a special occasion. And so, when she died, her death wasn't a natural one, because somebody got wise to what she was doing, and Alexander found out about it.
She was pretending to spy, perhaps, said Tuppence, for Germany, making friends with Commander, whoever it was.
Call him Commander X, said Tommy, if you can't remember.
All right, Commander X, she was getting friendly with him.
There was also, said Tommy, an enemy agent living down here, the head of a big organization. He lived in a cottage somewhere down near the quay, I think it was, and he wrote a lot of propaganda and used to say that really our best plan would be to join in with Germany and get together with them, and things like that.
It's all so confusing, said Tuppence. All these things, plans and secret papers and plots and espionage, have been so confusing.
Well, anyway, we've probably been looking in all the wrong places.
Oh, not really, said Tommy. I don't think so.
Why don't you think so?
Well, because if she, Mary Jordan, was here to find out something, and if she did find out something, then perhaps when they, I mean Commander X or other people, but there must have been other people too in it, when they found out that she found out something...
Now, don't get me muddled again, said Tuppence.
If you say things like that, it's very muddling.
Yes, go on.
All right. Well, when they found out that she found out a lot of things, well, then they had to silence her, said Tuppence.
You make it sound like Phillips Oppenheim now, said Tommy.
Well, anyway, they had to silence Mary before she could report what she'd found out.
Well, there must have been a little more to it than that, said Tommy.
Perhaps she'd got hold of something important, some kind of papers or written document, letters that might have been sent or passed to someone.
Yes, I see what you mean.
We've got to look among a different lot of people. But if she was one of the ones to die because of a mistake that had been made about the vegetables, then I didn't quite see how it could be what Alexander called one of us. It presumably wasn't one of his family.
It could have been like this, said Tommy. It needn't have been actually someone in the house. It's very easy to pick up wrong leaves looking alike, bunch them all up together and take them into the kitchen. I mean, you wouldn't, I think, make them really, I mean, not really too lethal. Just the people at one particular meal would get rather ill after it, and they'd send for a doctor, and the doctor would get the food analyzed, and he'd realize somebody'd made a mistake over vegetables. He wouldn't think anyone had done it on purpose.
But then everybody at that meal would have died, said Tuppence.
Or everybody would have been ill, but not died.
Or not necessarily, said Tommy. Suppose they wanted a certain person, Mary J., to die,
and they were going to give a dose of poison to her, in a cocktail before the lunch or dinner, or whatever it was, or in coffee, or something after the meal, actual digitalin, or aconite, or whatever it is in foxgloves.
Aconite's in monkshood, I think, said Tuppence.
Don't be so knowledgeable, said Tommy. The point is, Everyone gets a mild dose by what is clearly a mistake, so everyone gets mildly ill, but one person dies. Well, don't you see, if most people were taken ill after whatever it was, dinner or lunch, one day, and it was looked into, and they found out about the mistake, well, things like that do happen. You know, people eat fungus instead of mushrooms, and deadly nightshade berries. Children eat by mistake because the berries look like fruit. Just a mistake, and people are ill. But they don't usually all die. Just one of them does, and the one that did die would be assumed to have been particularly allergic to whatever it was. And so she had died, but the others hadn't. You see, it would pass off as really due to the mistake, and they wouldn't have looked to see or even suspected that there was some other way in which it happened. She might have got a little ill, like the others, and then the real dose might have been put in her early tea the next morning, said Tuppence. I'm sure, Tuppence, that you've lots of ideas. Well, about that part of it, yes, said Tuppence. But what about the other things? I mean, who, and what, and why? Who was the one of us? One of them, as we'd better say now. Who had the opportunity? Someone staying down here? Friends of other people, perhaps? People who brought a letter, forged, perhaps, from a friend, saying, do be kind to my friend, Mr. or Mrs. Murray Wilson, or some name, who is down here. She's so anxious to see your pretty garden, or something. All that would be easy enough. Yes, I think it would. In that case, said Tuppence, there's perhaps something still here in the house that would explain what happened to me today and yesterday, too. What happened to you yesterday, Tuppence? Well, the wheels came off that beastly little cart and horse I was going down the hill in the other day, and so I came a terrible cropper right down behind the monkey puzzle and into it. And I'm very nearly, well, I might have had a serious accident. That silly old man Isaac ought to have seen that the thing was safe. He said he did look at it. He told me it was quite all right before I started.
And it wasn't?
No. He said afterwards that he thought someone had been playing about with it, tampering with the wheels or something, so that they came off.
Tuppence, said Tommy, do you think that's the second or third thing that's happened here to us? You know that other thing that nearly came down on the top of me in the book room?
You mean somebody wants to get rid of us? But that would mean...
That would mean, said Tommy, that there must be something. Something that's here, in the house.
Tommy looked at Tuppence, and Tuppence looked at Tommy. It was the moment for consideration. Tuppence opened her mouth three times, but checked herself each time, frowning as she considered. It was Tommy who spoke at last.
What did he think? What did he say about true love? Old Isaac, I mean.
That it was only to be expected, that the thing was pretty rotten anyway.
But he said somebody had been monkeying about with it?
Yes, said Tuppence, very definitely.
Ah, he said, these youngsters have been in trying it out, you know. Enjoy pulling wheels off things they do, young monkeys.
Not that I'd seen anyone about, but then I suppose they'd be sure that I didn't catch them at it. They'd wait till I'm away from home, I expect.
I asked him if he thought it was just something mischievous, said Tuppence.
What did he say to that? Said Tommy.
He didn't really know what to say.
It could have been mischief, I suppose, said Tommy. People do those things.
Are you trying to say that you think it was meant in some way? So that I should go on playing the fool with the cart, and that the wheel would come off and the thing would fall to pieces? Oh, but that's nonsense, Tommy.
Well, it sounds like nonsense, said Tommy. But things aren't nonsense sometimes. It depends where and how they happen, and why.
I don't see what why there could be.
One might make a guess about the most likely thing, said Tommy.
Now, what do you mean by the most likely?
I mean people who want us to go away from here.
Why should they?
If somebody wants the house for themselves, they could make us an offer on it.
Well, yes, they could.
Well, I wonder.
Nobody else has wanted this house, as far as we know.
I mean, there was nobody else looking at it when we were.
It seemed to be generally regarded as if it had come into the market rather cheap, but not for any other reason except that it was out of date and needed a lot doing to it.
I can't believe they wanted to do away with us.
Maybe it's because you've been nosing about asking too many questions, copying things out of books.
You mean I'm stirring things up, that somebody doesn't want to be stirred up?
Well, that sort of thing, said Tommy.
I mean, if we suddenly were meant to feel that we didn't like living here and put the house up for sale and went away, that would be quite all right. They'd be satisfied with that.
I don't think that they...
Who do you mean by they?
I've no idea, said Tommy. We must get to they later. Just they. There's we and there's they. We must keep them apart in our minds.
What about Isaac?
What do you mean, what about Isaac?
I don't know. I just wondered if he was mixed up in this.
Well, he's a very old man. He's been here a long time, and he knows a few things. If somebody slipped him a 5-pound note or something, do you think he'd tamper with True Love's wheels?
No, I don't, said Tuppence.
He hasn't got the brains to. Well, he wouldn't need brains for it, said Tommy. He'd only need the brains to take the 5-pound note and to take out a few screws or break off a bit of wood here and there, just to make it so that, well, it would come to grief next time you went down the hill in it.
I think what you're imagining is nonsense, said Tuppence.
Well, you've been imagining a few things that are nonsense already.
Oh, yes, but they fitted in, said Tuppence. They fitted in with the things we've heard.
Well, said Tommy, as a result of my investigations, or researches, whatever you like to call them, it seems that we haven't learnt quite the right things.
Well, you mean that what I said just now, that this turns things upside down?
I mean, now we know that Mary Jordan wasn't an enemy agent. Instead, she was a British agent. She was here for a purpose. Perhaps she had accomplished her purpose. In that case, said Tommy. Now, let's get it all clear. With this new bit of knowledge added, her purpose here was to find out something.
Presumably to find out something about Commander X, said Tuppence. You must find out his name. It seems so extraordinarily barren only to be able to say Commander X all the time.
All right, all right. But you know how difficult these things are.
And she did find them out, and she reported what she had found out. And perhaps someone opened the letter, said Tuppence.
What letter? Said Tommy.
The letter she wrote to whoever was her contact.
Yes.
Do you think he was her father, or her grandfather, or something like that?
Well, I shouldn't think so, said Tommy. I don't think that's the sort of way things would be done. She might just have chosen to take the name of Jordan, or they thought it was quite a good name because it was not associated in any way, which it wouldn't be if she was partly German, and had perhaps come from some other work that she'd been doing for us, but not for them.
For us, and not for them, agreed Tuppence.
Abroad. And so she came here as what?
I don't know, said Tuppence. We shall have to start all over again and find out as what, I suppose. Anyway, she came here and she found out something, and she either passed it on to someone or didn't. I mean, she might not have written a letter. She might have gone to London and reported something. Met someone in Regent's Park, say.
Well, that's rather the other way about, usually, isn't it? Said Tommy. I mean, you meet somebody from whatever embassy it is you're in collusion with, and you meet in Regent's Park and hide things in a hollow tree sometimes.
Do you think they really do that? Sounds so unlikely. It's so much more like people who are having a love affair and putting love letters in.
I dare say whatever they put in there was written as though they were love letters, and really had a code.
Well, that's a splendid idea, said Tuppence. Only I suppose they... Oh, dear, it's such years ago. How difficult it is to get anywhere. The more you know, I mean, the less use it is to you. But we're not going to stop, Tommy, are we?
Well, I don't suppose we are for a moment, said Tommy. He sighed.
You wish we were? Said Tuppence.
Almost, yes.
Far as I can see,
well,
cut in Tuppence, I can't see you taking yourself off the trail.
No, and it would be very difficult to get me off the trail. I mean, I'd go on thinking about it, and it would worry me. I dare say I should go off my food and everything. The point is, said Tommy, we know, in a way, perhaps what this starts from. Espionage. Espionage by the enemy with certain objects in view, some of which were accomplished. Perhaps some which weren't quite accomplished, but we don't know, well, we don't know who was mixed up in it, from the enemy point of view. I mean, there were people here, I should think, people perhaps among security forces, people who were traitors, but whose job it was to appear to be loyal servants of the state.
Yes, said Tuppence. I'll go for that one. That seems to be very likely.
And Mary Jordan's job was to get in touch with them.
To get in touch with Commander X?
Well, I should think so, yes, or with friends of Commander X, and to find out about things. But apparently it was necessary for her to come here to get it.
Well, do you mean that the Parkinsons...
I suppose we're back at the Parkinsons again before we know where we are.
We're in it? That the Parkinsons were part of the enemy?
It seems very unlikely, said Tommy.
Well, then,
I can't see what it all means. I think the house might have something to do with it, said Tommy.
The house?
Well, other people came and lived here afterwards, didn't they?
Yes, they did, but I don't suppose they were people quite like, well, quite like you, Tuppence.
What do you mean by quite like me?
Well, wanting old books and looking through them and finding out things. Being a regular mongoose, in fact. They just came and lived here, and I expect the upstairs rooms and the books were probably servants' rooms, and nobody went into them. There may be something that was hidden in this house, hidden perhaps by Mary Jordan, hidden in a place ready to deliver to someone who would come for them, or deliver them by going herself to London or somewhere on some excuse, visit to a dentist, seeing an old friend. Quite easy to do. She had something she had acquired, or got to know, hidden in this house.
Well, you're not saying it's still hidden in the house, said Tuppence.
No, said Tommy. I shouldn't have thought so, but one doesn't know. Somebody is afraid we may find it, or have found it, and they want us to get out of the house. Or they want to get hold of whatever it is they think we've found, but that they've never found, though perhaps they've looked for it in past years, and then thought it had been hidden somewhere else outside.
Oh, Tommy, said Tuppence, that makes it all much more exciting, really, doesn't it?
It's only what we think, said Tommy.
Don't be such a wet blanket, said Tuppence.
I'm going to look outside as well as inside.
What are you going to do? Dig up the kitchen garden?
No, said Tuppence.
Cupboards? The cellar? Things like that.
Who knows? Oh, Tommy.
Oh, Tuppence, said Tommy, just when we were looking forward to a delightful, peaceful old age.
No peace for the pensioners, said Tuppence gaily.
That's an idea, too.
What?
I must go and talk to some old-age pensioners at their club. I hadn't thought of them up to now.
Oh, for goodness sake, look after yourself, said Tommy.
I think I'd better stay at home and keep an eye on you. But I've got to do some more research in London tomorrow.
I'm going to do some research here, said Tuppence.
Chapter 2 Research by Tuppence.
I hope, said Tuppence, that I'm not interrupting you, coming along like this. I thought I'd better ring up first in case you were out, you know, or busy, but, I mean, it's nothing particular, so I could go away again at once if you liked. I mean, my feelings wouldn't be hurt, or anything like that.
Oh, I'm delighted to see you, Mrs. Beresford,
said Mrs. Griffin. She moved herself 3 inches along her chair, so as to settle her back more comfortably, and looked with what seemed to be distinct pleasure into Tuppence's somewhat anxious face.
It's a great pleasure, you know, when somebody new comes and lives in this place. We're so used to all our neighbours that a new face, or if I may say so, a couple of new faces, is a treat, an absolute treat. I hope, indeed, that you'll both come to dinner one day. I don't know what time your husband gets back. He goes to London, does he not, most days?
Yes, said Tuppence.
That's very nice of you.
I hope you'll come and see our house when it's more or less finished. I'm always thinking it's going to be finished, but it never is.
Houses are rather like that, said Mrs. Griffin.
Mrs. Griffin, as Tuppence knew very well from her various sources of information, which consisted of daily women, old Isaac, Gwenda in the post office, and sundry others, was 94. The upright position which she enjoyed arranging because it took the rheumatic pains out of her back, together with her erect carriage, gave her the air of someone much younger. In spite of the wrinkled face, the uprising white hair, surmounted by a lace scarf tied round her head, reminded Tuppence faintly of a couple of her great aunts in past days. She wore bifocal spectacles, and had a hearing aid which she sometimes, but very seldom, as far as Tuppence could see, had to use. And she looked thoroughly alert, and perfectly capable of reaching the age of 100, or even 110.
"What have you been doing with yourself lately?"
inquired Mrs. Griffin.
"I gather you've got the electricians out of the house now,"
"so Dorothy told me. Mrs. Rogers, you know.
She used to be my housemaid once, and she comes now and cleans twice a week."
"Yes, thank goodness," said Tuppence.
"I was always falling into the holes they made."
"I really came,"
said Tuppence, "and it may sound rather silly, but it's something I just wondered about. I expect you'll think it's rather silly, too. I've been turning out things, you know, a lot of old bookshelves and things like that. We bought some books along with the house, mostly children's books, years and years old, but I found some old favourites among them.
Ah, yes,
said Mrs. Griffin. I quite understand that you must very much have enjoyed the prospect of being able to read certain old favourites again. The Prisoner of Zenda, perhaps. My grandmother used to read The Prisoner of Zenda, I believe. I read it once myself. Really very enjoyable, romantic, you know. The first romantic book, I imagine, one is allowed to read. You know, novel reading was not encouraged. My mother and my grandmother never approved of reading anything like a novel in the mornings. A story book, as it was called. You know, you could read history or something serious, but novels were only pleasurable, and so to be read in the afternoon. I know, said Tuppence. Well, I found a good many books that I liked reading again. Mrs. Molesworth.
Oh, The Tapestry Room?
Said Mrs. Griffin, with immediate comprehension. Yes, The Tapestry Room was one of my favourites.
Well, I always liked Four Winds Farm best, said Mrs. Griffin.
Yes, that was there too, and several others. Many different kinds of authors. Anyway, I got down to the last shelf, and I think there must have been an accident there. You know, someone had banged it about a good deal when they were moving furniture, I expect. There was a sort of hole, and I scooped up a lot of old things out of that, mostly torn books, and among it, there was this.
She produced her parcel wrapped loosely in brown paper.
It's a birthday book, she said, an old-fashioned birthday book, and it had your name in it. Your name, I remember you told me, was Winifred Morrison, wasn't it?
Yes, my dear, quite right.
And it was written in the birthday book, and so I wondered whether it would amuse you if I brought it along for you to see. It might have a lot of other old friends of yours in it, and different things or names which would amuse you.
Well, that was very nice of you, my dear, and I should like to see it very much. You know, these things from the past, one does find very amusing to read in one's old age. Very kind thought of yours.
It's rather faded and torn and knocked about, said Tuppence, producing her offering.
Well, well, said Mrs. Griffin. Yes. You know, everyone had a birthday book. Not so much after my time as a girl. I expect this may be one of the last ones. All the girls at the school I went to had a birthday book. You know, you wrote your name in your friend's birthday book, and they wrote their name in yours, and so on.
She took the book from Tuppence, opened it, and began reading down the pages.
Oh dear, she murmured. How it takes me back. Yes, yes, indeed. Helen Gilbert, yes, yes, of course. And when Daisy Sherfield, yes, oh yes, I remember her. She had to have one of those tooth things in her mouth. A brace, I think they called it. And she was always taking it out. She said she couldn't stand it. And Edie Crone, Margaret Dixon, oh, yes, good handwriting most of them had. Better than girls have nowadays. As for my nephew's letters, I really can't read them. Their handwriting is like hieroglyphics of some kind. One has to guess what most of the words are.
Molly Short, yes. She had a stammer.
It does bring things back.
I don't suppose there are many of them. I mean, Tuppence paused, feeling that she might be about to say something tactless.
You're thinking most of them are dead, I suppose, dear. Well, you're quite right. Most of them are. But not all of them. No, I've still got quite a lot of people living with whom I was, as they say, girls together. Not living here, because most girls that one knew married and went somewhere else. Either they had husbands who were in the services and they went abroad, or they went to some other different town altogether. Two of my oldest friends live up in Northumberland. Yes, yes, it's very interesting.
There weren't, I suppose, any Parkinson's left then, said Tuppence.
I don't see the name anywhere. Oh, no, no, it was after the Parkinson's time.
There's something you want to find out about the Parkinson's, isn't there?
Yes, there is, said Tuppence. It's pure curiosity, you know, nothing else, but, well,
Somehow, in looking at things, I got interested in the boy, Alexander Parkinson. And then, as I was walking through the churchyard the other day, I noticed that he died fairly young, and his grave was there, and that made me think about him more.
He died young, said Mrs. Griffin.
Yes, everyone seems to think it was sad that he should have done so. He was a very intelligent boy, and they hoped for, well, quite a brilliant future for him. It wasn't really any illness. Some food he had, I believe, on a picnic. Yes, Mrs. Henderson told me. She remembers a lot about the Parkinsons.
Mrs. Henderson?
Tuppence looked up.
Oh, you wouldn't know about her. She's in one of those old people's homes, you know. It's called Meadowside. It's about 12 to 15 miles from here. You ought to go and see her. She'd tell you a lot of things, I expect, about that house you're living in. Swallow's Nest, it was called then. It's called something else now, isn't it?
The Laurels.
Mrs. Henderson is older than I am, although she was the youngest of quite a large family. She was a governess at one time, and then I think she was a kind of nurse companion with Mrs. Beddingfield, who had Swallow's Nest. I mean, the Laurels, then. And she likes talking about old times very much. You ought to go and see her, I think.
Oh, she wouldn't like.
Oh, my dear, I'm sure she would like. Go and see her. Just tell her that I suggested it. She remembers me and my sister Rosemary, and I do go and see her occasionally. But not of late years, because I haven't been able to get about. And you might go and see Mrs. Hendley, who lives in, what is it now? Apple Tree Lodge, I think it is.
That's mainly old-age pensioners, not quite the same class, you know.
But it's very well run, and there's a lot of gossip going on there. I'm sure they'd all be quite pleased with visits. You know, anything to break the monotony.